Okay, I'm Linus Torvalds, and this is the Tux Radar blog.
Okay, thanks for starting us off, Linus. And welcome, everybody, to Tux Radar blog, podcast, whatever, season 4, episode 14, brought to you live. Brought to you, recorded from the beach. You may be able to hear seagulls and ice cream and the sound of the waves, because
that's what does ice cream sound like?
Sounds delicious.
It sounds like Ben. That's what it sounds like. Anyway, I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Graham Morrison.
I'm Jonathan Roberts.
I'm Ben Everard.
He's Linus Torvalds. And in this episode, we have news, we have discoveries of the week, we have rants and raves, which is going to be Graham and Andrew. That's me. We have Speak Your Brains and an open ballot, and we may even get around to having one last thing. You can subscribe to Linux Format.
I love the energy in this.
You can't subscribe to Tux Radar, the podcast, because it's free. You've subscribed already. But you can keep pathetic brass coins clinking in our pockets. You can keep our kids in Lego by subscribing to Linux Format at tinyurl.com/LXFoffer1. It's great. We've got... What have we got in the issue coming up on sale at the moment?
It's a distro megafest.
It is,
it's an all-you-can-eat distro thing. Two DVDs, 15 distros.
15 distros?
Yeah. 14 of them bootable. Ben did an awesome job.
Have you done that?
How have I done what?
Have you managed to get 14, not just a quadruple... Tetroctagonal booting DVDs.
Yeah, just pushed hard and they all fitted in.
You know,
crowbar
like.
Them onto the DVD.
He's awesome. Was this while you were on your yacht?
Surprisingly, it works better at sea. I don't know why.
Awesome. So, subscribe, buy the magazine, flick through it in WH Smith's. If you don't like it, don't buy it.
No, you can't because it's in the bag.
Oh, there we go. You just have to take the risk, buy it anyway.
Cool, time for the news. There's quite a lot happened this week, Fortnite, I think. First one is there's an escalation bug been found in the proprietary NVIDIA driver for Linux, a privilege escalation bug. And apparently the guy who found it reported it to NVIDIA several months ago, and they just haven't bothered to fix it. So now
7 months?
Several. Yeah. That could mean up to seven. I'm never sure really what several means. But, you know, a few months. And he reported it several months ago. NVIDIA haven't bothered to fix it. So he's come out with it in the open and said, this is rubbish. I think this is a great case for A, not using proprietary technology, and B, supports Linus's claims that NVIDIA, FU NVIDIA. Anyone else?
Well, weirdly, we were going to get to this later on, but Andrew and I spoke to Linus Torvalds just a couple of weeks ago when we were in Portland. We asked him about NVIDIA, and he wasn't quite as scathing as the video online shows.
Do you think he got a bit excited on stage, all the lights and...
He said he'd been up for 36 hours. He was still pretty scathing.
Yeah.
He's still... And I think that example is the perfect example of why he thinks that it's NVIDIA is bad in some respect. And I think he said that it's actually... all of this will be in a current upcoming issue, but I think he said that it was difficult cracking their proprietary mentality at NVIDIA. They just weren't used to dealing with free software. They're just used to dealing with this stuff on their own. But he did say, to end on a positive note, they were making progress, especially with the Tegra chipset, where the team were really keen, probably because they could make a lot of money out of it.
Yeah.
But that's where he said that he was seeing things, the ice melting in terms of NVIDIA's approach to free software.
Oh, so, that is exciting. It does... I kind of see this as a message against proprietary software. You know,
The thing is that the NVIDIA drivers, as we just saw in our hardware tests, are so much better than everybody else's.
Yeah,
I know most of us don't play games, and in fact, Linus said he just doesn't give a damn about playing games.
Yeah.
But I do quite enjoy playing the occasional game, and I want Linux to be able to do all of this stuff.
Yeah, you want to make use of your hardware. If you've got it, you want to use it.
Don't want to boot to Windows just to play a game.
No. But then if you look what's happening with Valve and Intel, they've now got the games developers working together with the graphics card driver writers.
Yeah.
Which is brilliant. Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess that's kind of a win, actually, if NVIDIA are getting better, Valve are working with Intel, this depressing news story actually works out quite well.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. Okay.
If only we had any games to play.
Hey, we will soon. We will soon.
We will
soon. And we do, thanks to the Humble Bundle.
And so, we do get, you know, things are a lot better than they were a couple of years ago.
Not even a couple of years ago, about 6 months ago. Mm. They're a lot better than they were.
Well, since the Humble Bundle, as you say.
Yeah. So next story, this is another depressing one, I'm afraid. Nokia have announced, it sounds like Nokia are now selling all of their cute assets. Sad. I don't think anyone is surprised to hear that this is happening. No. The question is whether anyone wants to buy Qt.
I think whether it's good or bad news depends on who buys it.
Mm. Yeah, and what they do with it. It could fall
if in. Anyone buys it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still dual license, isn't it? So you're still under the GPL.
Yeah, yeah. So development can continue in the community, but there's, you know, there's a big difference if you have full-time people employed to work on it as to how of the quality of that project. Although apparently GTK only has one person working on it, so
it is mental.
Yeah, so maybe Qt can get by in a similar sort of situation.
Wouldn't the ideal here be if a company took up development under the GPL rather than buying the commercial licensing? Yeah,
that'd be really cool.
Well, if they don't do it under the GPL, then they're missing something.
Yeah.
In fact, Qt and Trolltech have always been fighting against this kind of open source philosophy, really.
There is scope, I think, for... I was just thinking recently, there's quite a lot of small open source companies who work on things, like, especially in the namespace, Collabora, and there's a couple of others as well, small companies who have, you know, several dozen of developers, huge, you know, small companies, but who are making really valuable contributions by hiring developers in key places. So maybe there's some scope for something similar on the KDE side.
I think there's loads of scope. I really think Qt is a fantastic API. I think it's a brilliant toolkit. I think Nokia has done some good for Qt, I think, but it could do a lot more. I think it could be the perfect cross-platform smartphone API, for example, with QML, if it worked on Android and iOS devices, in the same way that Mono seems to be doing so well.
Yeah, that's another good example of a small open-source company.
Qt could do that, as well as, you know, reinforce the KD desktop, because it works so well when people are being paid to work on it. Qt 5 is due out sometime in the next month or two. Let's just hope that they can get that out, LGPL, before everything goes...
So there's again, another sad story with a silver lining to it.
And the silver lining is thanks to free software.
Yeah, because
we don't
have
to worry too much.
Yeah, but it can live on without a commercial company.
This could be an ideal opportunity for the mysterious blue systems.
Yes. Did we ever find them?
I've been in touch with the people from Blue Systems and...
From their volcano bunker.
Yeah. I checked the IP address and it was from some small Cayman Island place.
Really?
If only. But
did he have a strong South African accent and sounded like he was talking to you through a sock?
No. But it sounded like from a space station, really. I don't know. I should have followed up. I think it's my fault that I never quite got this together. I've got their email still, so we can chase that up. But... yeah, so maybe Blue Systems will step in. That might be the ideal company to do it. Whoever they are, whatever they do. Okay, also, the flip side of this, good news story, KDE 4.9 has been released.
Yes, brilliant.
Graham, you're a KDE user?
I haven't tried. I am a KDE user. I love KDE. I haven't installed 4.9 yet. I just listed the brief upgrades. I think Dolphin's had quite a few usability upgrades. There's more file metadata. Ocular, the PDF reader, now has annotations. And they're starting the stuff that they need to do to make it work with Qt 5. I think it's just another solid bug fix stability upgrade, which is what they need.
Yeah. Just I think with the big... Everything after 4.0 was really stability updates, wasn't it?
Yeah.
No news is good news as far as KDE 4 is concerned.
Keep their heads down with
to
all this GNOME stuff going on.
Given the story we're about to move on to, no news is really... It should be good news for every free software project, because the next story, there's been a new project announced called Clang, which is another Linux audio framework, because the developer started it because he was frustrated with ALSA, OSS, Pulse Audio, Jack, and all of that. And... It's yeah, and
it's hilarious.
It's yet another audio framework for Linux. It seems like developers get caught up just, you know, creating new frameworks and never actually building the things that should go on top of the frameworks. But I should be a little bit fair. Apparently, he's reusing the OSS API, and it'll be in kernel, so it should be very low latency. And
it's a stupid idea.
It's a common API that people already know, so it doesn't necessarily throw the baby out with the bathwater. But
Linus thought that this problem was already solved with Pulse Audio.
Yeah, it annoys me when the new frameworks, like we said, no news would be good news on this front. I don't want to hear about another new audio framework. I want to hear about the awesome audio application that's running on top of your audio framework that already exists.
My problem with, I think Pulse Audio is the solution. My problem is that the user-facing tools are just hideously complicated. Mm. If everybody just saw a single volume controller, and the fact that you can consistently switch between devices and input and outputs in a logical, easy, and this is all UI stuff, then I think the problem's solved.
But one thing, yeah, because that is all possible with Pulse Audio, isn't it?
It's just over-engineered.
It's just the user-facing stuff needs to be pared down. So yeah, it's a bit disappointing.
Paul Davis, the author of Ada, he wrote an interesting blog post about Clang, which apparently that was just a placeholder page. Development hasn't even started.
Oh, really?
They just actually wanted, it was like a request for comment.
Yeah.
And it wasn't meant to get all the attention on Reddit Slashdot that it did. But Paul Davis lists, there's too much here. There's probably about 1,000 words and all the problems that Clang seems to be addressing, which he rebukes.
Oh, he says they're not problems.
Yes, he says they're not problems, and in fact, this is just a complete waste of time. And the fact that it was posted anonymously, and there's not even an email address to get in touch with whoever's posted this, means that it's just probably not worth our effort.
Oh well, that's good then. But life is good once again. More silver lining. this is an awesome day. Sorry, more bad news to follow. Kernel version 3.5 has been released, and it turns out that it's got some power drain issues. They've isolated the bug that's causing it. It's to do with the Intel graphics drivers. They've found the patch that actually caused a regression in power usage. So hopefully a fix won't be far away.
It's surprising that, you know, they tried to be very careful about these kind of things. I mean, in fact, I think it was 3.5 was delayed sometime because of some bug that they were worried about that would occur, you know, one in a trillion times.
Yeah.
And yet something like this slips through without anyone noticing.
Yeah. Apparently none of the kernel devs use Intel hardware on a laptop.
Really?
That's kind of the impression you get. Like, if they used Intel hardware on a laptop, they would surely have noticed this issue themselves.
Yeah.
So, I know, but at least they know where the issues come from and it's getting fixed. Final story, as it's kind of already been revealed, it's a bit of an anticlimax, but LXF went to OzCon and talked to Linus.
Yeah, that was awesome.
We were picked up by a chauffeur-driven Hummer driven out to a private airfield.
And we were blindfolded. Did you look then? You saw that it was an airfield.
I could tell that we were going south-southeast, mainly from the warm plume of volcanic ash from St. Helena.
Yeah, what is there to say?
You guys had fun from the sounds of it, given a recording of Andrew last week that you sent, last podcast.
Yeah, you know, we were just chilling.
We didn't realise that the pint, they came in pints, firstly, and then the pints were 8 or 9%. Well, we only realised when we actually left the building.
Ben, you guys did. You got a ton of interviews done while you were out there. Met a load of interesting people.
Yeah, we did. It was a fantastic week. OzCon itself was kind of hit and miss. It was full of cloudy this and cloudy that, and framework this and the world's gone startup mad. It feels a little bit like 1999 again.
Yeah.
I don't know what is this with graduates. Two graduates get together. One's the CTO. One's the CEO. They've got some domain name that's got a funky name, and they create a startup. OzCon's full of them.
I like the idea of startups without the titles.
Boss.
Yeah.
Or boss of X, boss of Y.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're going to be the chief of something, you've got to have to people to jump over. Yeah. But we did meet lots of people, had some great interviews. You know, the people in free software are still awesome. They're still what makes it the best possible place to work in. And we emailed Linus. He said yes. And we went over to Linus's place to do an interview, which, well, personally, was like the pinnacle of my career.
Yeah, you did say the other day, now what?
Where do you go from
there? Bradley Wiggins might have won the Tour de France and the gold trial, but you guys interviewed Linus. Now,
you know,
what?
And then this has changed my life, and, you know...
It's true.
He's the end of level boss.
Yeah. The interview went quite well. We were all nervous. It'll be in the next issue of the magazine.
Yeah.
Cool. Look forward to that. And that is the end of news. That wasn't exactly lightning, but I quite enjoyed it.
That was good, yeah. Discovery. Discovery of the week. Fortnite. I haven't said this is my favourite section for a while. Actually, news is my favourite section. Anybody discovered anything? Or shall I go? I've got a discovery.
Go for it.
Okay. Is it about some obscure audio software?
No, I try really hard not to do the obscure audio stuff. This has been around for ages, but I only learnt about it this week when playing around with Google. And it's the Linux kernel swear count.
Hell yeah.
At www.vidarholen.net. And this is awesome. It's a graph of all the swear words in the source code for each kernel release, right from version 1 to version... Well, he only goes up to 3.29, so there's no 3.5. But what's fascinating... I can't really read out the words. I don't really want to read out the words, but it's all the words you'd expect, plus penguin, which is in the middle. And what is really interesting about it, I've written... Well, you can see which releases must have been more problematic. So, for example, there's a great big spike in swear words around between 2.412 and 2.55.
I think it's interesting as well, the changing popularity of different swear words.
Yeah, that's true. So the SH one, there's a real peak. So is that a single contributor just having a lot of grief with a load of code? Penguin stays about the same. This is the number of swear words. This is actually per line. So you can see that the swearing has actually gone down a lot per line.
So as the number of lines has increased.
Yeah, so they're actually getting a lot cleaner per line.
Is that as the proportion of the code that Linus has written?
But I think, yeah, it's a really interesting kind of way to look at the code. Things don't seem to be decreasing, which is generally there's still just as many swear words in the kernel as there ever was.
Just a lot more lines.
There are fewer boobies now.
There are fewer boobies, and I think the intensity of the swear words is going down slightly, so that probably means that the quality of the kernel's going up. That's my discovery.
I think it's an ace discovery.
Anyone else?
Yeah, me.
Go for it, Andrew.
It was discovered... Oh, no, it was news last week that Raspberry Pi, the factory, is now cranking out 4,000 a day. Is that right?
Yeah.
So I ordered a Raspberry Pi on Friday, and it was delivered to me yesterday.
Oh, have you got it already?
Yeah.
Oh,
now, cool. We had a post on the comment to one of the previous podcasts just this week that said, where's everybody getting their pies from? Because he'd been waiting 17 weeks.
Wow.
So where did you get it from?
I got it from Element 14. Yeah, so that's a discovery for me. And another discovery, we've already mentioned it, is the beer in Portland. It's just so strong.
That was great, your reviews intro.
Oh, thanks.
I really like the way that you put it, how the fact that there were so many monopolistic pubs in England and breweries controlling the quality of the beer, and it's the opposite in Portland. So every place you go into, you get a different selection of beer. That was what Andrew said.
Yeah. It sort of came to me one night after a few too many IPAs. But if everything else, if all your competitors are rubbish, you have no incentive to excel. You just have to be slightly better than rubbish. Which is what gives us, you know,
Carling
and Foster's and all of those other beers that are not very good.
Just seems to me that most British brewing companies are better at advertising than making beer.
The Foster's ads are ace, yeah. Anyway, that's it. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Raspberry Pi. Woo!
Ben, John?
I've got a discovery. Again, it's a little out of date, but not too much. It's talking about the LinkedIn password leak that happened a couple of months ago. I was reading through a blog by some of the security researchers that had a go at cracking them and looking at what they found in the data. And there were 6.4 million passwords leaked, and they found that 52% of them they cracked in under 2 hours.
So pretty standard hardware, you said as well.
Well, it's all off-the-shelf hardware. I mean, there's four GPU setups, and I forget the exact GPUs they were using, but I had a look at it, and they're about 500 quid each. So the machine, I mean, probably about a three and a half grand computer.
Right.
So not by no means sort of secret government laboratory standard, but more than most of us have sitting on our desks. And with that, they're able to do 15.5 billion checks per second. And since the passwords were unsalted, they just broke in no time at all.
It's a massive security breach because so many people have used the same password on so many different accounts.
Exactly. Yeah, 14 million of the passwords they found straight in their word list without any alteration.
Wow.
And that's a word list they'd taken from previously cracked sites. Yeah, and the other, I think, 3 million or so that made up the half were just minor alterations on passwords they'd found elsewhere. Yeah, I mean, it's a massive fail on LinkedIn's part because, well, not only did they let the file get stolen, but it was so easy for them to crack. It was unsalted, which means that, you know, they only have to check each password once. They don't have to recompute it for every account. And it was SHA-1, which is just a really fast hacking algorithm. Like I said, they were able to do 15.5 billion checks per second. Had they used SHA-512, which is now used in most Linux systems, they could only do 2,500 checks per second. Wow. That's the level of difference.
Yeah, that's astronomical.
Yeah, and SHA-512 is designed to be able to be slowed down as computing power increases.
Right.
So it won't just...
Right.
Get weaker as time goes on.
So everyone switched to SHA-512 and use long passwords.
What did you say the number one password was?
The number one password, I forgot to write it down.
It wasn't password then.
Oh, they didn't actually publish, they didn't say what the number one password was, they had the number one root, so like the word that it was taken off, and LinkedIn I think was top, but the top one that wasn't related to the site was love, and then Anna.
Anna. Wow.
Oh.
It didn't say if those two were used in the same.
A lot of Anna's getting a lot of love.
Indeed.
Out in the world on LinkedIn.
That's quite heartwarming.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the silver lining again.
Yeah, this is a really positive show.
But yeah, they were able to create long passwords as well, over 20 characters with 4 more random words, which is what so many security people point you to, a famous XKCD comic.
Yeah.
Well, if it's an SHA-1 and unsalted, that won't do it. So that's my discovery.
Brilliant. Thanks, Ben. That leaves John.
Yeah. I discovered that Red Hat certifications actually do improve your job prospects. Because this is my last podcast. I finish at Linux Format a week tomorrow. Well, I guess a week on Monday, actually. And start a new job a week on Tuesday. So I'm leaving Linux Format and the podcast and Tux Radar behind. So
that is really sad. We're going to miss you terribly, John.
Yeah, I'm sad to leave as well. I've had such a great time working on Linux Format.
You've been
the last
a fantastic member of the team.
Yeah,
you know,
it's been my first job and really great first job. I've really loved it so much, and I'm actually quite sad to move on. But
well, I'm personally really sad. It's just been lovely having you here.
Oh, thanks, guys.
The moral compass. The silver lining provider.
Well, we won't be like invading Devon quite so often, or attacking Indians, or any of the other racist things I'm involved in.
If I had the time, I'd put them all together into a thing and put it here, but I haven't.
And there's another silver lining. I get a faster computer now.
Yeah, I get a faster computer. So. Yeah, my stuff's already been spoken for. I've wiped the hard drive with some kind of zeros, and... yeah,
What were you doing on there?
Well, no, but, you know, I checked my bank account and stuff. And,
yeah, you're right. Actually, Ben is very good at this.
Yeah, Ben's too into that kind of stuff to entrust that too. So
next month, a tutorial on computer forensics and John's bank account details.
I might write it again before I leave. But it is good news for me because, new job is fun, and I'm moving to be with... my fiance, so that'll be really nice. New part of the country, new challenges and all that. So
you've got to stay in touch.
Yeah, I do want to keep writing for the magazine a little bit and stuff, so I'll try and do a bit of freelance.
And if you're ever back in Bath and it coincides with the podcast, you'll have to come in.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
We'll go down the pub and do
it. Sounds like fun. So long.
Awesome. So that's a little bit of... it's a happy future for you, so it's another silver lining to that section.
John escapes.
John escapes. Yeah, we're just sucked deeper and deeper in.
As the markings on the side of the ship.
No, you know, you can't let this happen.
What?
You've got to stay positive. Just because John's leaving.
How can I be positive?
So it's a halfway reminder. As a halfway reminder, let's remind everyone that John is leaving.
Oh, no! So, still to come, we've got Rants and Raves, which is Graham and Andrew. We've got Speak Your Brains and Open Ballots, and there may even be time for one last thing.
Okay, so moving on to Rants and Raves. This fortnight, Andrew will be ranting and Graham will be raving. So, you have 1 minute, gentlemen, starting now.
This is a stealth rant, because at first I'm going to talk about something ace and then describe how it doesn't exist in this country. As we've just heard, I went to OzCon, and in America, and also Canada, there are lots of places with free Wi-Fi, like airports and departure lounges and hotels and conference centres and pubs. And it's great because you can get on the internet for free, and that's fantastic. But the bad thing is that we don't have this in England. Like, in Heathrow, it costs about £1 million. Obviously, these aren't the exact figures, and I haven't checked in a while.
Eventually, it would cost £1 million.
Eventually, it will cost £1 million, but free, even if the price of the Wi-Fi in Toronto increases at beyond, like twice the price cost of inflation, it will still be free. This is completely unjustifiable in this day and age. Boris, why is this bad? Why is this, fix it, all of you.
That's a very good rant. I completely agree with you. It's insane. And you just walk along the street, because I can't afford to get a data contract or a phone contract in the States, but you just walk for like 20 metres and there's a free Wi-Fi access point.
Yeah. O2 are linked into the cloud and they've got a load of free access points.
But you usually get them for free through your...
If you've got an O2
contract.
If you're paying for it, if you're paying O2 for it.
Yeah, but I'm just on pay-as-you-go. So, paying them very, very little.
O2. Other mobile phone providers are available. See what you can do.
I hope you guys were using some kind of SSH tunneling technique to protect all your traffic as you're using these open Wi-Fi hotspots, yeah, which are probably blatantly set up just so people can steal your bank account details.
Nah.
Yeah, otherwise anyone could have cracked into that message that I sent last week and made it, doctored it to make it sound like I was drunk.
Right, I'll go next then.
Okay, yeah. So, moving on to Graham, you have something happy to say.
Shall I go?
Go.
I am going to rave about Linus Torvalds. Linus saved my life back in 1993 when I graduated from some computer-related study and thought, the world of computing is incredibly boring. I don't want anything to do with it. It's just Windows and DOS and rubbish. Linux saved me. It was exciting. It was interesting. It was the natural progression on from the Amiga. And that's mostly thanks to Linus. But the great thing about Linus is he's just so down to earth and ordinary. He's really not interested in it. He proves himself by his code and the things that he does. He's not interested in the hype or the enigma or the ego that surrounds all of this. When we met him, he's the most ordinary, down to earth, interesting guy we've met. There's just no kind of worries about what he thinks he's going to say or how people are going to take how he says it, which is completely refreshing when we spent the week talking to other people. So I really just want to give a big thanks to Linus, and he's awesome, and we all should be very proud that he represents what we all are involved with.
Excellent.
Yeah, big shout out to the Linus Massive there.
Right,
he lives in like a normal house as well. It's nice. But he doesn't have a private island or a hollowed-out volcano like Larry Ellison. He could.
Does Larry Ellison actually have?
He bought an island.
Isn't quite on the same level of wealthiness as Larry Ellison.
But the thing is,
right?
But he could be.
He could be.
That's the point.
Yeah, I guess so.
He created this thing which is now worth, you know, billions and squillions of pounds.
Yeah.
If he'd done an Alec Guinness and taken 1% of the merchandising, you know...
But all those penguins sold.
Well, the thing is, I think he really could do it. He just doesn't want to. It's not that he even doesn't want to do it.
Yeah.
He knows what he needs for a good and happy life.
Yeah.
And he does it.
He's got that, yeah.
Yeah. I think, I don't want to speak for him. I have no idea, really, how he does anything. But that's the impression I got. Okay, so it's time for Speak Your Brains. And we've got two Speak Your Brains for this episode. So thank you very much for taking the time to send them in. The first one is from... Joshua. He says, hi guys, if you like, this can be used as an inspiration for a rave or even to read as the rave itself. If you do this, do so quickly. It just fits in the 1 minute mark. So he goes, 3, 2, 1, go. So I'm a student and I study graphics. I also really love free software. Autodesk's Inventor is still lurking on my drive, but that's material for a rant, not a rave. For the non-CAD graphics though, free software fits the bill nicely. Scribus is a decent publisher and Inkscape is a great for editing vectors. My most recent discovery though is Critter. At first I was dubious about installing all the KD libs, but man, did it pay off. It's fantastic for concept development and annotations. I used it for my previous major assignment and had lots of fun doing so. Naturally, when I found a bug, I wanted to help out, so I followed KDE's crash reporter to submit a bug. 9 minutes later, I was astounded when I discovered one of the devs had verified it and committed it a fix. I really love free and open source software, but to me, the bar has now been raised. I'm now trying to tinker on Critter Source in my own spare time. It is the easiest dev setup building guide I've ever followed, and the developers are really helpful. I don't know much about C++, but hey, that's what the internet's for. Long story short, KD development and the internet and free software are awesome.
And that's just 4 seconds short of a minute.
He must have read it out.
That's pretty epic.
That guy's awesome.
I was reading it very quickly.
I'd really like to see
Josh Bell, he wins.
I'd love it if he sent us some of the stuff he'd made with Critter and Inkscape and Scribus and stuff. Just show off what these free graphics stuff can do.
That's a great idea, Josh. Send the stuff in and we'll put it on TuxRadar.
Yeah. And 9 minutes for a bug fix, that's got to be some form of record.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
and that's phenomenal.
Okay, so this probably will classify as a rant. This is from Edward Herbst. Sorry if I haven't pronounced your name right. Has your publisher lost their brains? I really like your magazine, but as a resident of the US, the print version costs around $170. I find this a bit excessive for something I put right in the recycle bin when it's arrived. As a subscriber with access to the PDF files, I always had an issue, read long before it arrived, and a few times even read the following issue. Since I only use 64-bit distros, the discs are rarely reused, and again, downloading long before the magazine arrived. So when digital versions become available, I switched. But I have to ask, why the publishers of one of the finest magazines dedicated to the Linux operating system make it easy for an iOS, Mac, or Windows, and Android user, and almost impossible to read on Linux? Your only Linux option appears to be Zinio. However, it isn't available for reading on their website. It can only be read offline using the Zinio 4 reader, which requires Adobe Air to be installed first. Since Air is no longer supported for Linux, it's become a catch-22. Could you please explain what in the world your publisher is trying to accomplish here? While I do keep a Windows install around for gaming, though maybe not much longer if Steam is successful, I refuse to read a Linux magazine on another OS as a matter of principle. I do hope I won't have to cancel my subscription. Completely agree with him. He's bang on, and it's something we've talked about internally here for a long, long time. It's something that we've always had to make excuses for on the various forums and everything else that we look after. He's completely right. It's madness that there isn't a native version of Linux format on Linux. The problem really is down to Future Publishing not having the resources to give us any more resources to do this ourselves, and we're just too busy making the magazine to actually offer any more. However, for months and months now, we've been trying to make it so that people can subscribe to the subscribers area on Linux format at a much more reasonable price, so you just get access to all of the PDFs and the latest issue. And just this week, it seems we've had a breakthrough. We were promised that it would actually go live last Monday, but it hasn't happened. But the fact that I think they're making that promise means that it really can't be far off. So hopefully soon we'll at least be able to offer a reasonably priced, cheap subscription to the digital version of Linux format on our own servers in a way that we can manage. And that's the best I can say, I'm afraid. Right. So thanks both for your Speak Your Brains. Much appreciated. Send me yours for next time, and we'll try and get them in.
Now it's time for Open Ballot. The question. Right, this is inspired by a post which John found, and it was quite evocative. It was called something like Gnome Staring into the Abyss. Yes.
I do have a little picture of a little gnome stood there by Mount Doom or something like that. Staring
mournfully
into the abyss.
Looking down.
Oh no, it's come to this.
I'm thinking of that Caspar David Friedrich, or David Caspar Friedrich, the Wanderer Above the Mist.
Yes, I know. Yeah, I know exactly the one you mean.
Is that the one with the tree and the...
With all the mists and the...
Do you know if I know that one?
No. Anyway, that's what I'm thinking of. So a few months ago, we asked whether or not KDE had become a third-class citizen on desktop Linux, but maybe we got the question wrong. GNOME is losing mind and market share. Distributions like Mint and Ubuntu are dropping GNOME, and many important applications aren't planning to port to GTK3. So what we wanted to know in this open ballot is, what do the developers of GNOME need to do in order to win back users and developers? That doesn't make any sense. Oh, maybe it does. Fosco says, bring our easily and deeply customizable old desktop capabilities back. That is all. We should give us a bit of background to this. GNOME 3 is the undoubtedly very pretty, but not all that. Oh, Ben's shrugging. He doesn't find it pretty. Okay, fine. It's the arguably very pretty, but definitely not very customizable version of GNOME, which replaces the old GNOME 2.
The direction things are going, I mean, I just saw this week, and I haven't made a note of it, unfortunately, but there was a list of things that are being removed from Nautilus for the next release of GNOME. And it's like, there's a big list of features like I can only rightly remember the compact file list view because I use it. But there's loads of stuff they're just removing to make it basically what they see as being more touch friendly. And those features are just gone forever. Which I think is madness, but that's because I'm a KDE user.
I think perhaps we should frame it a little bit. There are a lot of distros are moving away from GNOME Shell, but still using the GNOME applications, like Nautilus. And
I guess the same could be said for Unity, couldn't it? Yeah. They're mostly GTK applications.
Definitely.
I don't feel like Canonical actually give the GTK developers the credit they deserve when they talk about making Unity their own desktop.
GTK developer.
yes, which is tragic. It's like GIMP.
Yeah.
We've got a lone voice in the wilderness here from Penguin Anonymous, who says, I know that I'm in the minority on this, but I'm sick of all the GNOME 3 bashing. I find it a perfectly usable, distraction-free desktop, as is. If you want widgets, go get them at https://extensions.gnome.org. And then he sort of undermines his point by saying, I would, however, argue that the extension site needs a little work.
I do think, I agree with him, but on the whole, I think GNOME Shell is really close to being very, very good. There's just a few things that aren't quite right, like the lack of a shutdown button, obviously. And what you're saying about all the options being removed from Nautilus sounds mad. And I think they've tried to overcomplicate it a little bit. But, you know, stuff like the activities overview where you see all your windows and you can just hit the Windows key and start typing the name of an application and it's there and you can launch it. Things like that make it very close to being really, really excellent. It's just that should be the core and things should be around that. And just simplify it and keep it a bit more plain. But yeah, I do kind of agree with him.
Back on simplification, John's point, Jokey Rhyme says, it saddens me each time a new GNOME is released and I read a bunch of changes being made to Epiphany. Why is the GNOME team developing any resources, devoting any resources at all to this web browser when it would be so easy to just use Firefox, Chrome or Chromium? If the word on the street about decreasing development resources is true, then surely it makes sense to stop developing the GNOME version of everything and just focus on what GNOME does best.
One point about that quickly is that in the post that I put up following up, someone had commented things like Epiphany, they're actually a great example of shared resources because it's based on WebKit. They're only writing the GTK interface, so it links in with the desktop very well, whereas the back end is the same as Chrome or Safari or Conqueror or whatever else. So
I actually quite like Epiphany. I think it fits in really well with Unity, actually.
It's fast as well, really fast.
Unity for the win. Stuart says, it is hard to change the desktop metaphor. GNOME and Unity are trying to move the desktop on from the start button menu mindset. This is very hard to do, in that they are changing the fundamental interaction of the user with the system. Goes to say some of the things. Things like hiding the shutdown option behind the Alt key, I can understand. They, that is the developers, want people to suspend their machines rather than restart. Well, yes, fine, but
why do they care what I'm doing with my machine?
Exactly. I don't want to do with my machine what the GNOME developers want me to do with my machine.
If I wanted other people to tell me how to use my computer, I'd use Windows.
Oh.
Soundbite of the fortnight, week, month.
Peter says, I lost interest in GNOME developments after the whole kerfuffle with the shutdown buttons.
It's amazing how this issue is pivotal.
That's come to, I think, symbolise everything that people dislike about GNOME. It's fixing problems that aren't really a problem. It's making some things harder to do. And although that seems a pretty small example, that does sum up most of the other problems with it.
But also, it's the same thing kind of happened with KDE, but GNOME 2, you know, with the last Mint releases when GNOME 2 was still the main desktop, it felt awesome. It felt like it was really getting somewhere. Yeah. And then they kind of ripped down all of those walls. You know, KDE did it. And it's just like, you think, no, I don't want to have to go through it all again for another 4 years. You're going to say, actually, we're going to try a new desktop paradigm.
That's the other thing that they said was, that the reply I put up said, you know, we had exactly the same issues when GNOME 2 came out. That got really badly flamed as well. People hated it, people complained, and then people came to love it. So, you know, maybe in another couple of years' time, people will love GNOME Shell, and then they'll come out with a new...
I was around then and using Linux, and the people weren't online, you know, half as much as they are, anywhere near as much as they were now. It wasn't the same kind of environment. Also, they didn't change the desktop paradigm. You know, he may be right, and I don't know, but it certainly doesn't feel like this.
Yeah.
Angry mob, not verified, uses words like retard and mentally ill. One in four of us will suffer from mental illness at some time in our lives. Please don't contribute to the FUD surrounding mental illness on Tux Radar. Hyauj says, what do they need to do? Make GNOME 2 pretty like GNOME 3 and then leave it be. Okay. Anonymous GNOME refugee says, I've always said the best thing about GNOME 3 is that it showed me how great KDE is.
Actually, that's true for me as well.
Yeah, me too, actually. Until GNOME realises that the desktop needs a GUI too, that is as well as the tablet, it will be relegated to competing with Android and Apple, an endeavour that will surely fail. Dari1966 says, nice to see you back, Ben.
I'm beginning to suspect that maybe my father.
Was he born in 66?
No.
Blah, blah, blah. Three things. Ubiquitous 1980 says, don't treat fallback mode like a second-class citizen. Listen to your user base. Don't chase after being all things to everyone. That's pretty cool. Coming to the end now, Penguin at... Anonymo.us says, radical change rarely accepted by the common people. If the developer insists they are right, then stick to it. Time will give us the answer. No need to change to cater to the common taste. Maybe GNOME 3 is the future. And I've written beside that, I see pride, I see power, which is a quote from Cool Runnings. Which is
such a great movie.
A great film. And that's exactly what this thing reminded me of.
I really like the bit at the end of it where they come out of the bobsleigh car or whatever and they carry it to the end. It's a really nice moment.
It's moving and it has John Candy in it.
Yeah.
Like all the best films.
Yeah.
Duke Richard Storman. Duke Richard Stormannington says, the king is dead. Long live QT and the glorious plasma desktop. And Jerubi says, the best thing they can do is to be XFCE.
Can I... John O'Bacon has weighed into this debate with his own blog post replying to the original one.
This is Ubuntu community manager, John O'Bacon.
Yes, and he said it represents his personal views and not those of Canonical. And because I felt a bit annoyed as I was reading this, and I'm probably not in a good position to comment on what he said, I just recommend going and reading what he had to write about the whole thing and reading the comments that follow, because it was an interesting post and there's interesting debates in the comments, even if it did descend into a bit of a slanging match between Red Hat and Canonical supporters. So worth reading, if only for the soap opera drama value.
Well, Jono admitted to us that the move to Unity had been arrogant.
Did he say that?
Yeah.
Wow.
That was the word he used. I think maybe it wasn't the move to Unity. It was possibly not giving an alternative, like foisting it upon users.
Oh, upon users, but not necessarily in their dealings with GNOME.
I can't remember in what context.
No, I think you're right. I think it was about the users. It wasn't about...
But anyway, you can find that out in a forthcoming issue of Linux Format. We're not sure when we'll print it, but we will.
But I think this whole thing around GNOME 3 has been an awesome win for open source software, because you've got this new desktop that a lot of people don't like, but it's taken, what, a couple of months? Well, okay, half a year for developers to get onto GNOME 2 and turn it into something modern and
Cinnamon.
Exactly.
GNOME shell extension.
This is all because of the open source base that GTK provides and all the GNOME free technologies.
If you don't like Metro and you want to use Windows, you're screwed.
Yeah, yeah.
It looks like we've got a replacement for John. Ben and the Silver Lining ending to the... Okay, and that is the end of the Tux Radar podcast. Thank you very much for listening, everyone. We appreciate it. Thanks, everyone in here, for taking part. Thank you, John, for being such a great part of the team. We're going to call it a day, and we're going to go back to the office from this lovely beach location. See you in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye. Ciao. It's such a nice day.